Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it.
An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Bang!
This is the Open Floor podcast where we talk about the NBA and everything going on in it. On this episode, I will be joined by Kenny Smith, the former two-time NBA champion, best known these days as one-fourth of the famed Inside the NBA crew. We'll get into Inside the NBA, its future, with Turner set to lose those NBA rights after this season, plus some NBA, some Olympics talk with Kenny as well. But first, the Minnesota Timberwolves were one of the best stories in the league last season. We'll enter this one with pretty high expectations. No better person to talk Timberwolves this week than John Krasinski, the Wolves writer at The Athletic. Sometimes you'll see him manning the sidelines with his TV suit on, good to go, always happy to double dip. John, I know the feeling, though, because I did that in Boston for a while, and it is nice sometimes to get two paychecks.
It is nice to get two, yeah, if you can, better than one, usually. And so, yeah, I'll take it wherever I can come, and as you know, when you get your face on TV just a little bit, it doesn't hurt the brand. So I'll stick with it. So
it's remarkable how that works sometimes too. Like, guys tend to talk to you a little bit more, to get a little more loose with you, all because you do 20 second stand-ups for three or four times a game. It's remarkable.
And do them very poorly too. Like, I am not a pro at all, but hey, whatever works. So,
hey, believe me, I know that feeling, as well. All right. So it really is an interesting season coming up in Minnesota for a lot of reasons. And I want to start at the very, very top, because, you know, obviously one of the big stories last year was what was going on with ownership. We saw the transition or attempted transition from Glenn Taylor to the A-Rod Mark Lowry group fall apart, with Taylor basically shutting it down. A-Rod and Lowry not going away. They added Michael Bloomberg to that group back in June. Where do things stand with all this? Like, how big a lingering issue is this going into the season?
Well, it certainly is a huge issue when you look at kind of the direction of the franchise. This is a franchise that has been in the gutter of the league for decades, and now it's finally coming out of it. They've made the playoffs 3 years in a row in the Western Conference Finals. You have Anthony Edwards as this bankable box office star, and you have a really good front office, really good coaching staff. For the most part, things feel very stable here, very un-Timberwolves-like. But then you go all the way to the top, and we really don't know yet who is going to be owning the team in the next several months. Right now, Chris, there's a little bit of a holding pattern in this process. They are going into arbitration to kind of make a decision on who is in the right here. And that is not going to take place until the first week of November. So the season is going to start with all of this still kind of hanging in the air. I anticipate that they will go through this process of arbitration. One side will win or one side will lose. And then, you know, that'll take another 30 days or so. And if it's A-Rod and Mark Lowry win an arbitration, they will have to get approved by the NBA. That will take a little bit of a time as well. So this is going to linger well into next season while this team is trying to take that final step in the competitive process and go from Western Conference finalists to the NBA finals, which, as a team, they are entering the season believing they have a shot to do it. So it is certainly it's something that is absolutely hanging out there that everyone's kind of looking at and waiting to see how it plays out. And it's going to have some sort of effect on just the overall feel of what's happening around here.
You know, you talk to a lot of people over there. You know, is this really just a case of like seller's remorse for Glenn Taylor, who, you know, if he put the team on the market today, could probably get, you know, maybe double what he originally had that asking price for A-Rod and Lowry? Like, what does this come down to? I mean, not many people I talked to bought into the whole, like, they missed a deadline kind of thing, and that's why we're here where we are. Like, what do you think this comes down to?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little complicated, but I do think that Glenn Taylor has seller's remorse. I do. I think when he first agreed to go into this arrangement with Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez, it was kind of right in the middle of the COVID situation. The team was really not very good. There was all of this uncertainty. And so it felt like at the time he was ready to move on. That, you know, hey, he had owned the team since 1995. You had all of this uncertainty around thing with the league and professional sports and everything with COVID, and what was going to happen, and the team was not very competitive. And then in come Mark Loury and Alex Rodriguez. They had a very good initial sort of relationship. They really connected well. Glenn Taylor felt comfortable with the two of them, and so they reached this agreement. Then, as they come out of COVID and we go along the way over these previous the next 3 years, that relationship started to splinter and started to go the wrong way. I think that certainly it would be foolish of me to say, you know, Glenn Taylor looks at this and say, "Man, I could get $3 billion for this right now." Would that factor in a little bit? I would imagine it would, into his thinking on what is going to happen with this transaction. But I think that there's also been just a fraying of the overall relationship between the three guys. And so what Glenn Taylor's side will tell you is it doesn't matter if he had seller's remorse or not. If the Alex Rodriguez and Mark Loury had done everything that they needed to do to fulfill their side of the agreement, he couldn't even make this play right now. And it wouldn't work out. Obviously, Mark Loury and Alex Rodriguez vehemently dispute that. They believe that they've done everything possible and that Glenn Taylor is really just trying to kind of go into the weeds and say, "Well, you didn't dot every I, you didn't cross every T, you didn't CC people on emails. That's not enough to blow this deal up." And so, because it's gotten to this point, now it's just an incredibly bitter dispute. And so, neither side trust each other at all, and it's gotten really, really ugly. And so, how this ex eventually plays out remains to be seen. But it certainly has gotten to a point where I know the league looks at it and is very concerned about just how things have gone, the mudslinging in the media, all this stuff. It's a bad situation that needs to be resolved as soon as possible.
You know, you're around the locker room every day. Like, do you get the sense that it affects it at all? Because look, this was a thing last year, and the Wolves still went to the conference finals, and it obviously didn't bother them or affect them much, if at all, last year. I mean, I long term for sure. Like, who owns the team is impactful. How much money they're going to be willing to spend, how deep into tax territory, like how they run the team is important. But like short term for this year, do you think it's important? Do you think the players give a damn about an ownership dispute going on above them?
In the very, very short term, I don't think so, Chris. We've talked to a bunch of player, every player really, and this was all, remember, this was all blowing up right in the playoffs, or right before it. And I would talk to Ant and Cat and Rudy and Mike Conley and all of these guys, and most of them had no idea the extent to which this has kind of had deteriorated, and didn't really weren't paying attention at all to it. Now, their checks were all clearing. They had all of their negotiations and contracts taken care of. And so in the very short term of it, I don't think that it's going to affect players or coaches really at all, because they're just looking at right as what's right in front of them, the next game, the next paycheck. If that all keeps coming, that is going to be a non-issue. Over the long term, as you said, I do think it will play in. I mean, once you start to get into a team that is going to be into the luxury tax this year, that is going to be probably doing it going forward for a couple of years as they try to keep this window open and makes decisions on long-term contract extensions, on the what they're investing in the franchise, that could potentially affect what players and coaches and executives look at in terms of, is this a place I want to be, or is this a place I want to go, want to leave and go somewhere else? Is the stability and is everything kosher here? And am I going to get, are we doing everything we can to win? And so, whoever comes out of this the winner in November, December, whatever, they're going to have to make real, assurances and have real communication with everyone that, hey, I've told you I'm the best person, or we're the best people to run this. Now I'm going to show you what that looks like, because there will be a period of time where it'll have to resettle in, and you'll have to show that over the long term that the Minnesota Timberwolves are a franchise that you want to be a part of.
So let's talk about the short term for a minute. Last year was kind of the fun year for Minnesota, like, you know, defied any and all expectations, get all the way to the conference finals, almost playing with house money last season. This year you come in, or they come in with real expectations, championship level expectations. They bring the core of the team back intact. That was obviously smart to do for a team that good. Kyle Anderson's gone. Joel Ingles is in. They get a point guard of the future and Rob Dillingham, who knows how much he'll contribute, I guess, right away. This all felt like the right moves to make from the outside. What did you think of the offseason that the Wolves had?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Tim Connelly did a really good job of working with what was available to him. Because they are going to now, this roster becomes very expensive this season with contract extensions kicking in for Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. You have Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns both on max deals as well. For the first time in a long, long time, the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be a luxury tax paying team. That obviously limits some of their flexibility in terms of roster building around this core. And so they knew they were not going to be able to afford Kyle Anderson. He was an important part of what they did, but not like, I don't think it's a backbreaker that they did lose him. They went out and get Joe Ingles. But I thought that Connelly was really smart in being aggressive on draft night and going and adding the 8th overall pick out of nowhere. He basically pulled that rabbit out of his hat, gets Rob Dillingham. And one thing, Chris, that they missed in the Dallas series, they couldn't keep up offensively with Kyrie and Luka. You know, Karl-Anthony Towns struggled. Ant was kind of basically their only bucket getter. And so they needed someone else to be able to come in, create their own offense, and score. And they think that Dillingham is going to be able to be that guy. He's small, he's a rookie, but they think over the course of the year, they can get him into filling that niche in this roster because they believe they have the defense. They believe they have so many of the other things that you need to be a finals contending team. They just needed a little more juice offensively, and Dillingham can certainly bring that. So they got him. They got Ingles as kind of a veteran, pseudo Kyle Anderson type of a player to help out. And then I think Terrence Shannon has a chance to actually do a little something for them, you know, at the back end of the rotation, their 27th overall pick. So for the limited resources that they had available to them, they were pretty creative in going out and getting guys that I think can really help them. And so I thought it was a good offseason for them.
I love the Joe Ingles pseudo Kyle Anderson, like basically just describing like the kind of slow, really good playmaking wing, right? Like,
yeah. Super smart, not athletic at all, but goes in, makes the passes. And Joe's a much better shooter than Kyle. Kyle's a much better defender than Joe. So there's a little bit of trade-off there. But yeah, like these are the older guys that are just going to get by on guts and guile and throwing an elbow into your ribs every once in a while. I think that's about the key to their success.
That's a great lane to have. Like my pal Brian Scalabrine could have fit in that lane from from years ago, the pseudo-athletic thinker types. You mentioned Cat, and to me, he's the big wild card in terms of high-level success. I mean, he did get bullied in that Dallas series. I mean, overall, his numbers ticked down in the playoffs, but the Dallas series, he was, what, 25%, I think, from three-point range. And you're not going to win when your first or second best player, whatever you want to call him, is playing like that. I mean, is he kind of the – I'm thinking of him as the wild card. I'm thinking of him in his ability to get to that level they need a player like him to get at is probably going to be a difference maker for them in the playoffs. What do you think the expectations are on him going into the season?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we just talked about some of the additions that they had that may or may not help them, but I do think that what they have emphasized all summer long has been, if this team is going to take the next step, it's going to have to come from internal improvement. You're going to need Ant coming off the Olympics, and I'm sure we'll get to that, to take another step. I think Jaden McDaniels is a big key in taking another step himself, but Cat is absolutely in that conversation as well. He's going into his 10th season, so he's a firmly established veteran in this league. He played exceedingly well against Phoenix and against Denver to help them win those two series. They don't win those series, or they don't sweep the Suns without Cat playing the way that he did. They don't beat Denver without Cat playing as well as he did in that series. He clearly did not play well and did not shoot well against the Mavericks, and that was a key reason that they were bounced so easily. And so how he comes back off of his first real playoff success in his career, he'd only been a one and done in the playoffs a couple other times, is going to be enormous for them. He's making a bunch of money. He I thought, has really improved his defense over the last couple of years. I think also sneakily, he's one of the guys that actually works with Rudy Gobert well. Like, they jive, they have a good chemistry. He is a willing passer to Gobert. He has kind of done a lot to incorporate Rudy into this, and that's going to need to be continue. But also, I think he's going to have to do some introspection and look at what went well and what didn't in the playoffs, and how he can learn from that experience and go further. I mean, we've seen many, many examples over the years of NBA players, their first time in that bright spotlight, it not going well and having to learn from that and bounce back from that. I do think that if they get into that situation again, there's a chance for him to have better success because he had that experience and he wants it so badly. Sometimes he wants it a little too badly. Sometimes he presses a little too much. And so if he can be more comfortable in those spots, having been there before, I think that'll be huge for the Wolves, because he is one of their few like knockdown 3-point shooters, and they need him to space the floor. If you're going to make that Cat Rudy combo work, Cat has to be a 40%+ 3-point shooter and just give them a different element offensively. He's capable of that. He did that at some points, but he's got to do it in the biggest spots to make it financially feasible to keep this whole group together. There's a lot laying on it.
I do think you're right about the experience part of it. I think having that experience going to a conference finals is going to be a huge asset to him, just knowing kind of what it takes to get to that next level. And I wondered in that series against Dallas, like, how much fatigue had set in with Cat. Like, he missed the last chunk of the regular season with that injury, and you know, going through the Western Conference, even if you sweep Phoenix, like, it's tough. It's tough to succeed at that level. And I thought he settled a lot in at least the first few games of that that Dallas series. I remember I think you were sitting near me in game four when he's just like, it seemed like in game four when he had that stretch when he went to the basket every time, it was like a big fuck you to all the media that said to stop shooting threes and all that. So, like, more of that, I think, is all that's really needed to help take him to another level. Just don't settle quite as much for the 3-point shot. Because even though they need him shooting threes, right? They need him floor spacing. He can't just be that for them. He's got to be a little bit of a post player, a little bit of an aggressive guy going to the basket.
Yeah, and I think, like, you're spot on about the fatigue part. I do know he was playing with it, that knee was bothering him. Mm-hmm. So he was a little bit limited. But I think one thing I noticed big picture from Kat, Naz Reid talked about it, Ant talked about it, after the series was over, they were totally out of gas. I think that, you know, they had the huge emotional win in game seven in Denver, coming back from 20 down. It was a remarkable game, dethroning the champs. And they kind of, I felt like there was a sense within the team when they won that game that they've arrived. They did it. They conquered the big obstacle that they were going to have, and now we're going right to the finals and that's it. What they failed to realize, because so few of them had ever been there, is they were halfway through, Chris, the playoffs. They still had two more series to win. And I think that once they got to the Western Conference Finals, they did not have the rest that they had because of the seven game series, and they just didn't have the emotional and the physical gas tank anywhere near full enough to go against a team that was playing just great basketball, and Kyrie and Luka were unbelievable in that series. And so that's part of the inexperience, is like, when you get through two rounds, you haven't done anything yet, even though in the scope of the franchise, it's the best season that they've ever had, or mm-hmm. one of the two best they've ever had. So that's part of that learning experience as well. And a lot of them talked about how they have to report to camp just even in much better shape, because the season is so much longer than any of them had ever gone before.
We know Rudy got cooked at the end by Luka. Draymond obviously thinks he sucks, but, like, I mean, we gotta be past the, like, can Rudy and Kat play together stuff, right? That was a great bounce back year for Rudy. Like, he was phenomenal all season long. They got to the conference finals. Like, do you see any issues with kind of running that front court rotation back with those guys?
Yeah, no, I don't, Chris. And you're right. I mean, I thought the Draymond stuff was ridiculous. I think a lot of the discourse around Rudy is kind of absurd. You know, he got laughed at because Jokic got him in the second round game, the one game. And then he got laughed at because Luka cooked him at the end in isolation. Just find me any big that is going to stay in front of Luka in that spot. No one, not Anthony Davis, maybe Bam, but I mean, no one does it. Like, they cook everyone. So here's the simple fact of it. I think that as a team, Rudy is very accepted by Kat, by Ant, by Mike Conley, by the whole group understands finally. Like, the first year they didn't really see the real Rudy. He was banged up a little bit, and it was a kind of a struggle to get everyone on the same page and learn each other. And there were some people in there that were just like, man, is, you know, how are we going to make this work? What's the key to this? In year two, there was a lot more compromise on both sides. Rudy was really healthy. He played great. He absolutely deserved Defensive Player of the Year. Like, any of revisionist on this because Luka got him at the end is nonsense. But there, internally, within the coaches and the team, there's a lot of trust in Rudy Gobert. What they're going to have to be able to block out is the external conversation around Rudy. I mean, he is a pincushion for the rest of the league. They're just, people love to make fun of Rudy Gobert because he's not aesthetically pleasing offensively, because he does drop a pass here and there, because he does miss shots and fumble a little bit. And people love to make fun of Kat as well for the things that he says on podcasts and stuff like that, for maybe a failure to break through in big spots. And so they have two of the guys who are the most criticized players in the league, and they have to just be able to block that out, and they have to just not let that bother them. I think sometimes in the past it has bothered both of them, and they're just going to have tunnel vision. But when you evaluate that trade and what it's done for this franchise, what it has allowed Anthony Edwards to play in games that are very, very meaningful early in his career, when it shows that this is a franchise that now is actually in the hunt and needs to be respected, it's a win for the Wolves, you know, 100 times over, because of what Rudy has been able to do. There's just so much respect that they have for him. He is not a perfect player. He does have faults, and they just have to kind of block out the Draymond Greens of the world and not let that bother them, so they can keep kind of this thing rolling.
Yeah, the polarization of Rudy is always a little perplexing. Like, I get some of it. Like, I get the perception that, like, maybe he's a little bit soft and all that. But, like, game should recognize game, right? And Draymond knows how good Rudy is. You know, Luka knows how good Rudy is. Like, when I say this all the time, like, when I vote for Defensive Player of the Year, one thing I do is I ask all the assistant coaches I know, like, who's the guy you have to game plan for the most defensively? And, you know, 90%+ of the time it's Rudy Gobert, still at the top of their list. Like, there are other guys, of course, Bam's on that list and some perimeter players. Marcus Smart a couple of years ago was there. But, like, it's almost always Rudy. Like, you have to figure out how to score in the paint when he's on the floor. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's very much overblown. Last thing for you. You know, Anthony Edwards had a fantastic season last year. He's coming off that Olympic showing. The expectation is going to be huge for him. And look, he's not shying away from it, right? No. Like, he's kind of leaning into the "I'm the new face of the NBA" stuff. And you know, I should be all NBA first team. Wants to be in the MVP conversation. There is a lot of pressure individually, team wise, on Anthony Edwards. Like, how do you think he's going to meet those expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sky is the limit for him, honestly. I mean, I think what makes Anthony Edwards special is that he can say all of those things. I think I should be the MVP. First team all NBA. I want the shots. Like, all of he says it, and he's authentic with it. He believes it more than anyone, but he also has this somewhat humility underneath it, that he relates to his teammates very, very well. There could be cause for that to be alienating among teammates, or they could say, "Hey, this is all he's making it all about himself. I don't, the ego is too much. Like he hasn't done anything in this league yet. All of that, and it could really kind of drive a wedge between people. But he is when he's within the team, he deflects the attention to his other teammates. He is encouraging them. He is always has their back. And so he has a way of galvanizing the guys around him in a very unique way. And so I think that is going to help him. His just overall personality is so endearing and so kind of, it's hard to not like the guy. I mean, Steph loved him in the Olympics, and LeBron and KD and all these guys, they just gravitate to him. So I think the expectations are not a concern for me. I think it's as long as he is able to retain kind of the antness of him and still be endearing while also having to kick an ass every once in a while, having to hold people accountable and use what he learned in the Olympics and apply it in a way that his teammates still know that he is doing this for them and that they're all together. That's going to be the key because athletically, skill level, commitment level, work ethic, all of that is just off the charts. And it's just how does he take that final step as a true leader and really like make this team his is going to be the key for kind of keeping this going in the direction that he is. I think that he'll be able to do it just because of that personality is so vibrant and is so kind of funny and charming and it gets everyone kind of going that way. But that's the final piece. Like he was still trying to figure out when to use his voice, when to back off, when to empower, when to put a boot in the butt, all of that. And that's the trickiest part of this. And so if he gets that part of it down, if he's learned how to do it from Steph and from LeBron and from those guys, that's the final piece of the puzzle. And then I think he can absolutely be a top five player in this league. That's how highly I think of him.
Yeah, I did love his approach in the playoffs where when things went bad, he absorbed all the blame. And when there was credit to be taken, he dispersed some of it, right? And he's like, no, this guy, watch what Kyle Anderson did out there. Look at what Cat did, on the defensive glass. Like he was really, really in moments where a lot of people are watching, he made sure to say and do all the right things. I think it's a great step in the right direction for him being a leader.
Even in the Olympics there, Chris, like he had a big role early, coming off the bench, scoring, shooting, doing everything. Then in the medal round, the last two games, the first game, he didn't play well against Serbia. He played okay against France, but I thought it was really impressive that he understood the whole thing and like, I'm going to back off a little bit. I'm not going to force my way into this. I see that LeBron and Steph and KD are taking over, and now I'm just going to do what I need to do defensively. Support role players. So he didn't try to bite off more than he could chew in those situations. And I think that was another case of like he understands it. Like he's really got a high emotional IQ and can understand that stuff. So if that carries over, we'll should be in good shape.
See, more of that and less trashing players from the 1980s and
Yeah.
90s. That
And that
that's the kind of thing that's going to piss off a lot of people that you might want in your corner,
I was
down the
surprised
line.
to see that, Chris, because that's like not Ant. That's just never been what he has said before. So I don't know if he was caught at a wrong spot or what the heck he was saying. But yeah, I think that is less of that for sure, because that's not anything that he's ever expressed to us before. So that was a weird one.
Yeah, no question. John, it's going to be a fun year for you in Minnesota, busier both on and off the court. Appreciate taking some time to talk to me here.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, Kenny Smith is a two-time NBA champion, longtime member of Inside the NBA, the best studio show on television. He is joining us on behalf of Abbott. Kenny recently took part in a soccer clinic that Abbott and the Real Madrid Football Club hosted for pro athletes and influencers, where the participants received direct instructions from Real Madrid coaches. So, Kenny, I guess we start there. How is your soccer game at this stage of your life?
Well, first of all, when I went to Abbott and Real Madrid, let's get this straight. I signed a one-day deal with them. It's one day. If they need me at goalie, I could come in for a play. I'm telling you right now, I'm good enough at the goalie position to kind of come in for a play. So it was a lot of fun being out there with Max and Shore, great protein drinks as well. So we were just having a great time learning directly from the, you know, coaches from Abbott and Real Madrid. So that's a once in a lifetime opportunity that I'll remember. But I was decent. I was decent. I was happy with my production.
I'm often fond of telling people my soccer career. I was a goalie on my youth league team. We were 0-11, and that was the very end for me with the
beautiful
game.
No, we won.
Game.
So I won. Okay. I did. I won. I wouldn't say I was the MVP, but I was close. Only because it was 5-1. But the person who scored all the same 5 goals, it was the same person for it. So I would give them the MVP.
I respect that. So got to ask you about your day job, of course. The dust has settled on the NBA TV deals. Barring something stunning, it would appear that TNT will be out of the NBA business after next season. Charles Barkley has said he will stay with Turner beyond next season. Where does this all leave you?
Well, I think, one, firstly, you know, being this coming up season, if it is the last year, I feel like LeBron, when he was a free agent, I think that at the four of us one day have to sit down and go, we're taking our talents too. You know, I just feel that opportunity is there. Regardless where it is, we become a fabric part of the NBA. The heartbeat, the voice, pop culture, social. Like, those are the things no other basketball show were talking about before we started doing it. So for us, I think it's important to be part of the NBA. And we have a unique, how do I put it? We have a unique position to now be in the ownership thought process of the show, where we can make sure that the people that we know helped us become who we are, they're still employed and they're still doing great. Because we are the property, and it's showing now. I was in Europe, I was in Abu Dhabi, I was in Miami, I was in LA, and I get the same question. You guys are still going to be on the show. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to work itself out. But I think this might be we could create the most unique opportunity for people who've been part of this show. The four of us can do that. With the power that we possibly have now.
Yeah, it just seems so obvious to me, Kenny, from the outside. Like, hey, why not license the whole show to Amazon to keep this thing going? Everybody wins in a situation like that.
Well, I mean, you're just dealing with one, but I mean, there's four different people that have the property for the league. And I think at some point in our career, all of those people have, at times, with the exception now of Amazon, but a lot of people from Amazon come from other networks. They've all reached out to us individually or collectively and said, even the last deal, it doesn't work out with Turner. So we all know that the value that we have, if we decide to move as a unit, it would probably be the most colossal deal that's ever been put together, because it would allow people to have ownership in it. Or if we stay at WB, could be the most colossal deal if they somehow figure something out. But I have full confidence in what will happen in us because of the talent. I feel full confidence in Adam Silver as well, because, you know, how he's taken the league under his leadership from social justice and from financially. Like, we understand that this is where it is. I don't have any hard feelings anyway. I just know that the four of us have the opportunity to own something and give back to the people who made us, our producers, directors, stats, makeup, anyone that's been involved in the show that we feel needs to be there again.
You've been outspoken in the past about a desire to maybe work in an NBA front office someday. Is this potentially a opportunity for you in maybe a career pivot?
No, the opportunity is here. Honestly, Chris, like I said, without kind of going in too much detail, but the opportunity for the four of us, if we move collectively, would be monumental. It would set a precedent in sports television that would not have been set if WBD doesn't keep the rights. It would just, it would, even if we stayed there and did something internally, it would just be a monumental move by the four of us. So I think that's the most important, because I have to really think about the people who helped us get to this point. Of course, I can call some NBA teams and have opportunities there from any standpoint, but the people who got us there, our producers, directors, and film and all audio, and we have to, this is a great opportunity for us. If we move as a unit, that will be monumental.
So we're fresh off a USA Basketball gold medal. That's five consecutive gold medals for USA Basketball heading into Paris in 2028. One of the questions I've had, Kenny, is the sustainability of what USA Basketball is doing, where it's like we kind of care about everything in between the Olympics, and then we send the A-team to the Olympics. You know, that worked and has worked in previous cycles, but do you think the way they're doing things is sustainable in an era where, hey, you know, not only does all these other countries have great players, but they've got great players playing together for long periods of time, which closes the talent gap?
Well, the gap is closed because it's not USA Basketball anymore. It's basketball. It's world basketball. Like, throughout the year, like, I really, this is, Chris, this is the honest truth. I'm watching a game, and I forget that I have to root for USA, because I don't look at Jokic, I don't look at Giannis, I don't look at them as foreign basketball players. I look at them as basketball players. I cover them for years. I've been around them for years. I don't look at them as international until this. Like, it's kind of like you go over, if I come over your house and you like, I'm not sure what nationality you're on. What nationality you're on?
Irish. No good Irish teams yet, Kenny, you know?
And all of a sudden you give me some Irish beer. I go, damn, I just been hanging out with Chris. I forgot he was Irish. Until the Olympics come up, I honestly don't call Giannis a foreign basketball player. I don't call Embiid an American basketball player, because I know where his track. I just look at them all as basketball players, and I think the world is starting to look at it like that. And it's fun now to see the Olympics, where all of the greatest basketball players are now going back into their cultures and their countries and playing. But I root for Giannis. I was rooting for Serbia, like, for a long time. Watching this thing. I was watching it and rooting.
So you will be back on the desk with Turner this season. And look, it's been an interesting offseason. Some teams, Oklahoma City, among others, made some big moves to bolster their roster. But I want to ask you now, like, as we sit here in mid-August, do you think the landscape has shifted significantly? Is it still Boston and everybody else? Or do you think the gap has closed with the Celtics and other teams?
Well, I think the Celtics are still, you think about it, they really won the championship without their third best player, Porzingis, not playing much at times. Porzingis at times could be their first best player offensively. So, no, I don't think that the gap has really closed in yet on Boston. I think Philadelphia has done a great move, adding Paul George. But, you know, to beat the Celtics, you need size as well, you know, in multiple positions. So it's going to be interesting. In the West, I think the East is top heavy. And I want to see if more trades come to make that a more balanced, where the 10th seed in the West, you go, man, they could play around and be in the Western Conference Final. Where when you look at the East, you don't always say that.
You know, you've been part of back-to-back championship teams. How real is the championship hangover? We saw Denver kind of experience one this past year. You know, Boston, a lot of guys played in the Olympics, Porzingis out for a while. Like, how real is it to go from being the hunted to the hunter?
It's super real, because you have to fight against human nature. Human nature is to relax. Like, I've won something. You take a deep breath. You know, you've won the gold medal. You take the deep breath. And while you're taking that breath of relaxation, everyone else is intensifying. And so the hardest part about, you know, I've been blessed to be on a back-to-back championship team. The hardest part is fighting human nature. And human nature consists of not taking a long, deep breath. Because when you take a long, deep breath, everyone catches you.
Well, Kenny, you talked a good game about this soccer clinic. Is there somewhere people can go to watch some, you know, evidence of this?
Yeah, all you have to do is go to my Instagram. It's evidence of me putting in real work for Abbott and Real Madrid. There's work. Now, there's also going to be a lot of hydration stations when you see me drinking that 30 gram protein. And sure, you're going to see a lot of that on the sideline as I'm sweating. But the more importantly, you're going to see me putting in some real work. And I would say I might have been the oldest veteran there. So, and I still put in real work.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kenny, glad to see you putting in real work now. Be good to see you back to work with TNT next season, man. I always appreciate your time.
Thank you. All right, Chris.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.